Blog
and
Talk
hello,
Radio.
Everyone. And hello, everyone. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to the Kay and Gus Show. We welcome you to listen every Wednesday from 8 until 9 p.m. as we take a closer look at exciting news, information, education, and global communication issues. So if you want to call in, you can always call this number to talk to us, and that is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. I'm Kay Thompson, and I hope my partner, Gus Henningberg, is listening in and just may be able to do that. Now, I want to tell you something about Gus. I always start the show off by talking about my partner. Gus Henningberg created the Newark Plan, which provided training and employment for hundreds of African-American and Hispanic construction workers. This includes women. Now, this model plan was adopted by the state of New Jersey and has been nationally praised as the most effective construction affirmative action plan in the U.S. Yet, to Gus, his most effective constructive affirmative action plan to date has been the Prudential Arena, downtown Newark. Now, this is the first major league sports venue to open in the New York City metropolitan area since Continental Airlines Arena. This massive 18,000-seat arena is located just blocks from City Hall and downtown Newark. Now, the official name of this 18,000-seat arena is the Prudential Center. And if you haven't been there, you really need to, you know, see it. It is the newest arena of its size in New York. We have a great amount of information for you today, and what an exciting program. We have two very, very powerful women. One is Camille Yarborough, who is an award-winning performance artist, author, and cultural activist, and we're going to be talking to her in just about 2 minutes. And then we're also going to be talking to Carolyn Kelly, who is, you know, the first black female in professional boxing to be recognized as a promoter, matchmaker, and gym proprietor. So you will want to stay, you know, on the air and listen to this program because it's proving to be, and it's going to be very, very exciting. I'd like to say condolences to Gil Noble family. Gil Noble really changed the look, you know, of the black community by doing his show like it is on ABC. And as a matter of fact, he was the first to present, you know, anthropologists and Egyptologists and all kinds of information that we needed to know about. Now, what Glenda Taylor says in her book and her preface by Toni Morrison is this. She says, the reclamation of the history of black people in this country is paramount in its importance because while you really can't blame the conqueror for writing history his own way, you can certainly debate it. Then there's a great deal of distortion so that the presence and the heartbeat of black people has been systematically annihilated in many, many ways, and the job of recovery is ours. Glenda Taylor in Jalamuso's Drum goes on to say, she argues that the African-American female entertainer is a griot, a Jalamuso, a cultural historian who has preserved dignity, decades of American history within the pages of her autobiography and creative works. And this is a very significant appendage to history. The Jalamuso's Drum, her book, proposes that women such as Marian Anderson, Lena Horne, Ruth Brown, Nina Simone, Etta James, Aretha Franklin, and Eartha Kitt have been not only entertainers, they have played a major role in the civil and human rights movements. They have recorded American history in their compelling and powerful autobiographies. Right now, I'd like to go to, you know, Camille Yarborough, and I think she is on the line right now. Hello, Camille, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, of course. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kay. Thank you for inviting me to be a guest on your show and to really meeting you again after so many years.
I know.
Last time we spoke was on WLIB, I believe.
That's right, and how long ago was that? Over 20 years?
Well, it was
ago?
In the 90s.
Really been that long? Yeah. I tell you. Well, I'm so glad to have you on. Now, you are an award-winning performance artist, author, cultural activist, and you have a career like mine that spans over 50 years, several continents, mm-hmm. countless awards and accolades, and a few generations. You hear me, Nana Camille, you know I'm having trouble reading these days.
Take your time.
We're not as young as we used to be.
Yeah,
but Camille,
but we're wiser.
I know. We certainly are, more ways than one, I'm telling you. But you continue to inspire audiences. You had a long-running television show a popular musical CD. You can title it Ancestor House. And, you know, when you're called Nana Camille, before I go on with all your other accolades, you know, what does that mean? A lot of people don't understand the meaning of that, Nana Camille.
Well, it has to do with being a Jalimuso, which is what you mentioned a minute ago. Actually, that name does not say at all. It's coming from Senegal and Guinea and all of those places. It's a name for a female singer who deals with the culture, the history. So that designation as a Nana, again, comes from the motherland, but this comes from Ghana.
I see.
In our tradition, there was a royal family coming out of Ghana, and one of the positions was the queen mother. She was not the king's wife, but that was a position because there was a court, and there was a person who dealt with the finances, and there was a person who was security, and then there was a person who had to do with the drumming, the rituals and all of that thing. But the queen mother, she was the one who selected the next king. No king was put into position without coming through her. But she also handled the affairs of the community, the women in particular, and the relationships that went on in the community. She had to be a person who upheld the culture. That's not what I was trained here in theater. I was trained as an actress, as a dancer.
Yeah.
But the spirit part of me, the life that I had to discover in me, was the life that was recognized by some Ga people here while I was up at City College. And they asked me if I would be part of the royal court here. Dr. John Henry Clark was chosen, and he accepted the position of being their king here in this position, in this community, and he had to have a court. Professor James Small was his linguist selected.
Yeah.
And then they came to me and asked me, would I be the queen mother, take that position of queen mother to Henry Clark. So that's
now,
how
is this
that,
when you were installed?
Yeah, that was the first time. And that was here in New York City. Because they do it not just annually, but there are periods of time in which you are reinforced in that position.
Yeah.
And I also went to Ghana. I've been to Ghana about four times. And here when we were, you know, the First World Alliance, do you remember that?
World Alliance, of course.
That was a lecture series in Harlem, organized by Sister Kefa and her husband, Bill Jones.
Yes.
And there many of our people from the motherland would come over and sometimes just watch us to see how Africans in America were upholding and telling our story. And so there was a brother, a king, a local king who was here. Nana Sapon, and when I went to Ghana the second time, we went to his village, a village of Agogo, and eventually...
And what part of Africa is that?
That was in Ghana.
In Ghana, okay.
Yeah, in the Asante region of Ghana, in Kumasi, outside of Kumasi, near Kumasi. And so I was installed in his community, with the Asante people. Now, that's not supposed to happen. If you're with Ga, then you're with the Ga, or you're with the
Asante.
You know,
I was going to ask you about that. As a matter of fact, weren't there some princes or a prince who came from the Ga people to LIB, you know, some years ago? Because I remember someone coming in because they gave me an African name, and I wrote it down, and I lost the book.
Probably so. I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're not supposed to be a queen mother in those two communities, but since we in the diaspora, we have a different position, and our work is different. And so that's how that came about. But it coincided with what I was doing as an artist, an activist artist, telling the story of our people. And
you know, well, let's go back, let's go forward or back a little bit. You know, you're also an educator at heart. And for 12 years, you were on the faculty of City College of New York, and of course, people know that that's located in Harlem. And I was fascinated because when we talked earlier, and you taught African dance and courses on the internationally famous neighborhood. Yeah. And as an accomplished theater actress, you co-starred in Lorraine Hansberry, Lorraine Hansberry's To Be Young, Gifted, and Black, as well as, which I was really thrilled about, James Weldon Johnson's God's Trombones and Camino. So really very exciting. And we knew some of the same teachers.
Yes.
And had studied with some of the same people, you know. So I'm really tickled about that and pleasantly surprised about that. But what are you working on now also, Camille?
Well, there is a couple of things. I started... You know, when you've been here for a while, and I have been, and you've created a certain amount of work and presented it to the community as a gift, as something, as a tool to help us heal, to help us again come together, you don't want that work to just disappear.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the process of gathering. I did an interview with Lavinia Williams. I don't know if you know her. She was a marvelous teacher and dancer. And there's a lot of history involved in that. So I've had it transcribed. I'm going to put my work together in a volume, two. One, an autobiography. It's very interesting. Because after you've lived a while, there's so many places where you could start, so you have to make choices. And I wrote a poem, which I put on Facebook, which has to do with we have two lives. One is the body life, and that leaves after it does its work. It's gone, but the spirit life lives on. But I left out one. There are three lives we have, in my opinion, and that's as I've grown and observed the life we're born into, the body life, but our life's work is developing, acknowledging and developing and using our spiritual power. And that's the second life. The third life is the ancestral life. So it's not just two, there are three. And I want to start this with a manifestation of, the autobiography, and I have already started it, manifestation of the spiritual life. And then explain how that has directed my public life as an artist coming out of Chicago. But you mentioned the Nana, the Queen Mother area.
Yes.
When I came to New York to live, I had been here before when I was with Catherine Dunham. And I came back to live here. As soon as I was here, I went right up to Harlem because that was where I wanted to go. Everyone knows about Harlem.
I understand.
When I was with Dunham, and we traveled the world, whenever we'd come to a city, and Europeans, they would see us in the street and they'd say, "You're from Harlem," because everybody knows about the Great Harlem, the history, the tradition. So,
one of the most fascinating places in the world.
So I went to Harlem. And just walking, and I saw this store, went into the store, and it was owned by a Zulu man named Shikulu Shange, who kept that store for 40 years. He just reopened it. But I went inside.
No kidding, really?
I went inside, and I saw up on the walls, up on the shelves, some stools. And there were carved African stools, Asante. And I said, "Oh, look at that." I was fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And I picked out one. I said, "I want that one." And I purchased it. Actually, I purchased two, but that one it was the one I wanted.
Yeah, I did too, and I found out about them also.
Yeah. It was only later on that I discovered that that was a queen mother's stool.
Okay.
And that
God.
Was far. That was years before
yeah.
we got people
yeah.
called me to be
yeah.
the mother here.
There's
just things that come to you and you fit into your spiritual self.
Yeah.
But it
yeah,
takes
that's right.
time to mm-hmm. find out. But that's why I write what I write about our family
mm-hmm.
and about coming together,
mm-hmm.
about supporting one another.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes out of that middle life, that discovered life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That spiritual
you know, we
life.
Were talking. We were talking earlier about, you know, I think if I mentioned the picture of Shaka Zulu in connection
mm-hmm.
with Percival Bourdais, who was
yes.
Pearl Primus's husband.
That's
and
right.
And when she took him, yeah, she's an anthropologist and an ethnologist, I would imagine. I've forgotten a lot of the facts. But also I had him come to Kane College when I was there because they were just starting a dance program. And he
mm-hmm.
did a master class there. And as a matter of fact, when I was telling you earlier that I went to see him when he first performed, you know, the Watutsi Warrior Dance.
Yes.
You know, when it was when the High School of Needles and Trades were still there. And you laughed and you said,
I
didn't believe I was that old.
Because, no, it's,
yeah.
you know, you go back and you remember what inspired
yeah.
you. And you remember that
right.
there was a time when we knew so little about Africa. It was
yeah.
A mysterious place, and the world had painted it as some kind of frightening place. But we
yeah.
were, I and others in Chicago, where I grew up, the dance group there, we were longing to find out about Africa because we were dancing.
Yeah.
And this film came out, King Solomon's Mines. It was a British
yes.
film.
Yes.
And I think we were in the theater every day watching these
yeah, where they were the Watutsi perform
the
warrior dance with the spears
yes.
and the lion's mane. Oh,
these
God,
tall, tall, skinny people
yes.
who dance so beautifully with the wands and with the
yeah.
the long pieces on their head and they turn.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is Africa. This is part of our
yeah.
our hair, our lineage. And this is
yeah.
part of our culture. And it raised
mm-hmm.
us up. So when
mm-hmm.
Percival Bourdais, the dancers here saw
yeah.
that,
uh-huh.
they, as you said, they began to do those dances.
That's
and
right.
it was
That's
a,
right.
a beautiful time.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had had a number of the different dancers come over to teach at the studio and also studied on Jean-Léon Destiné.
Yeah.
You know, and Elia Palmieri and Charles Moore and, you know, so many of those people, Thelma Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Over there at the new dance studios, and dancing in the street was what we did after class. Remember that?
Yeah. It was a great, great cultural time. And
yeah,
we brought it about now. It was came during the time of the movement, civil rights
yeah.
movement, and
that's right.
They
that's right.
that was cross-fertilization there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the
and you know, one thing, that was supposed to happen at that particular time, I think. You know, because we all were looking to Africa and we were all seeing these new things that really weren't new, but to us it was new. I remember when I first, interviewed Dr. Yosef Ben-Yekinen, who we all know pretty well, you know, very well. And that was because of Gil Noble. Gil Noble was the first person that I saw on television with an African-American, a black show that changed the look of the black community forever. You know, next, of course, with Gus Henningberg, my partner, on
That's
Positively
right.
Black.
That's
but
right.
Gil had just finished the book Black is the Color of My TV Tube. Do you remember that?
Yes,
when
I
he came
it.
Out with that book?
Mm-hmm.
Up, yeah. I still have mine. And anyway, you know, when he had Dr. Ben on, that was the first time I had ever heard of a black Jesus. And so, you know, I had him on. It was absolutely fascinating. And I still have those tapes, by the way. We have transferred them to
mm-hmm.
DVDs. And we're going to also make our DVDs available to the public. But
very
also, when Dr. Ben was talking about the Black Madonna, he was talking about the fact that there were 16 different stories of the Immaculate Conception.
Yes, before anything came out of Rome or Greece or anything.
Absolutely.
Before Christianity.
Yeah, and I was fascinated with this. Now, and then just recently, a friend of mine was telling me that when I was telling her about the Black Madonna, and when Dr. Ben was talking about it, he said that the Pope in Rome goes to pray at the feet of the Black Madonna, you know, usually around Christmas
yes.
time. And that was in the New York Times. And lo and behold, it was. Now I have a picture of the Black Madonna. A friend of mine has sent me a picture of the Black Madonna, and it says Montserrat. You know, and she said she took this picture, and she was absolutely fascinated with the fact that I knew the story. And I have that on one of the tapes that I'm going to be making available. I should say DVDs.
Excellent.
So it's such, the culture is so rich. And you mentioned Catherine Dunham. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember Catherine Dunham coming to New York, and she was over at Alvin's studio. And she taught this one class, and I got in the class, and I was doing the leaps, and I went, oh, boy, I could barely, I mean, she was such an idol of mine that I could barely move, but, I mean, she was, it was just wonderful to see her, you know?
Well, she really opened the
and
way.
And you danced
for,
with her.
For some, yeah, with that company for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Before her, well, coming out of enslavement, there were a few dancers who try to uplift our culture. It had been debased. It has been called just primitive.
Yeah.
When I began to study our dance, it was called primitive dance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was conceived of and promoted as such. So when she came, when she began to study and began to pursue her career as an anthropologist, performer, she went deeply into the culture. That was one joy of working with her company, was that there was no stereotype there.
Yes.
There were no buffoons there. It did not come out of minstrel theater.
This was serious study,
and that was one of the joys of working in that company. And learning, for example, I did not know that our people had been in Mexico. But there
What's the story behind that?
Well, we've been there for years. We were on this continent. Ivan Van Sertima writes about before Columbus.
Columbus. And Camille, let me just interrupt you. I have a part one and a part two with Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, and Dr. Len Gunther. All in one show, part one and part two. We're going to be making that available.
That's extraordinary. You ought to show that.
Isn't that something? Oh, yeah. Part one and part two.
Yes. We were talking about Mexico. And so we've been here longer than anybody because we are the first humankind, first human beings.
Yeah.
So in that company, there was a dance number called La Bamba.
Yeah.
Which later became a musical hit, you know, record. So I was, at one point, I'd been in the show for some time, and there were other people doing the role of the young singer. The mariachis would come out and sing, and there were three of us, and I was one of the mariachis with this long wig on and all the whole thing. And I'm saying, what were black people doing in Mexico? Because I did not know that we had a history there. You go back for centuries. And so in doing that show, you learned that our people were from all over the world.
Absolutely. And remember the sculpture.
There's
this sculpture of them, the Olmecs, the Toltecs, and the Aztecs.
Yes, those huge heads that are down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a brother there from Argentina. And so you study and you find that the tango and all of those dance forms came from our people in South America, wherever we were. Of course, the Haitian culture was there, so you learn about our people in Haiti. In Brazil, there was that's the first time I saw capoeira was with the Dunham Company.
No kidding,
Francisco Rodriguez from Brazil. Dance capoeira in that company.
And I had walked away from dance, you know, some years ago when my father died, and I said I would never study dance again. And I said I'll do it when people start dancing on their heads. And lo and behold, capoeira came in, and I started doing it, and I absolutely loved it, you know?
Yeah. There's so much about our culture that is learned through our history that is learned through our culture of dance and song.
Yeah.
It's there. And that's what I do. I use.
All right. Now, one thing, too, Camille, when you were teaching at CCNY, Yeah. Now, how did that come about, and what happened with that, and give us that story?
Oh, it gets kind
a
of
long story.
Complicated. I was doing a lot of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And now they call it spoken word or open mic.
Yeah.
But we were, it was in blossom at that point, because this was the late 60s, 70s. We had plays. I was at the Public Theater. I did two or three plays down at the Public Theater.
Yeah.
And The Young Gifted in Black, and then television shows. I did Gil Noble's show, too, years ago. But the politics changed. And whereas during the movement, dance companies, black dance companies were funded, black theater groups were funded, the Negro Ensemble and all of those groups came to be, during pushed by the movement, just like Gil Noble's show came and Gus Henningberg's show and all of those other shows came during that upsurge of our
That's
people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that went on for a while, and then the pendulum began to change.
The politics
came in. Nixon came into office. Funds began to change. Whereas we poets were brought onto campus by the Black Student Union, unions, and by other black organizations, that began to stop. If you were conscious, if you came in talking about politics or public social issues, then you were not as welcome as you had been before.
We're going to have to tie this up in just about maybe 3 minutes. But you know, one thing, what I'd like you to touch on, the importance, just briefly, the importance of rap music and some of the rappers.
That's a continuation, just as the griot and the other oral forms came with us from the motherland. And with those old forms, we created spirituals first, then the blues and jazz and ragtime and all of street songs, all of those forms we created. Hip-hop was the latest form that came in that tradition. It was oral, verbal art form. It had to change somewhat because of where we are at this time. And created by genius people, young genius people.
Yeah.
Okay. But it was powerful.
Yeah.
And because of its power, it had to be taken over by the corporate world, and they began to dictate who was going to be a star and what they would say. And so it began as something beautiful, something inspirational, and an evidence of that talent that was still there. But then it was melded with pornography, and this is on the internet. You can see it there, how the directors from the porno world were selected to come over and create videos in hip hop.
Yeah.
And so over time, it began to be changed, and our young people saying that this was their form, and it was, and it still is. Were caught.
Well, Camille, really. You know, and we're going to have to do this again.
But listen,
you know,
I'm on Facebook.
You are a walking gold mine of information, you know?
You can reach me on Facebook. My website is CamilleYarbrough.com, or you can friend me on Facebook, Camille Yarbrough, Nana Camille Yarbrough. And
Nana Camille first?
Yarbrough.
Okay,
or
and
Camille Yarbrough.
Okay, and Camille is spelled CamilleE.
Mm-hmm. YarBrough. Thank you very much for reaching out.
Thank you, Camille. It's such a pleasure, and we'll be talking to you soon again.
Okay, dear. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. And I want to thank you to Camille Yarbrough. And really, that was a pleasure. That was a pleasure. I mean, she's... Wow, a professor. We're going to be talking now to Carolyn Kelly. Remember, I was telling you about Carolyn Kelly, and she was born and raised in the city of Newark, New Jersey. She received her formal education in the Newark school system and went to Shaw University, majoring, everybody, in political science. So what about Carolyn? She later served as the campaign manager for the first black senator in Newark, New Jersey, the former Dr. Hutchins Inge, and she went on to become the first black female licensed bail bondsman person in the state. She was founder and director of the Youth Opportunities Unlimited, an organization that she started with the former Brooklyn Dodgers baseball great Don Newcomb. And as the director, Mrs. Kelly later became the first black female in professional boxing to be recognized as a promoter, a matchmaker, and a gym proprietor. She has recruited an amateur boxing team made up of Newark youth and young adults, and she is absolutely fantastic and one of the most interesting people. Longtime friend, Carolyn Kelly, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Kay. How are you?
Good. Did I give you a good send-off there?
You
I mean, just having to be true. My God. Tell us about
I was wondering who you were talking about.
Excuse me? You were wondering who I was talking about.
Yes.
All right, so tell us who you are, Carol, aside from being my longtime friend.
Well, I think most of the things that you said, all of the things that you said, and
yeah.
I'm still striving to do more, to be more.
Yeah.
And that's mainly because our youth need us more now, Kay, than ever before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how do you find the students, you know, the reception of the students, you know, at your boxing gym? Because you've had several, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I've had many. As a matter of fact, they come in angry, confused, disgusted.
The kids. Uh-huh.
Yes, the kids,
uh-huh.
With the world. Mm-hmm. Hats turned on backwards, cursing every second. And that's because they need love. They need
uh-huh.
some of us, most of us, to care something about them, but to let them know that we love them, that we're not afraid
yeah.
of them, and that mm-hmm. They, too, can be president of the United States.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, you know. Now, also, you know, tell us about, I know you were, you're very, very good friends with Muhammad Ali and with Don King, and hopefully the next time we talk, you know, they may be on the air with you, or at least Don King. What do you think?
Oh, I certainly think that he will. As a matter of fact, I talked to him about you on yesterday, and he'd be more than glad to come on. Well, you see, my beginnings with Muhammad Ali, I used to go to his camp. He had a camp in mm-hmm. Deer Lake, Pennsylvania. So I
yeah.
started
mm-hmm.
taking kids up there on the weekend, like Saturday mornings, and we would stay all day. And I recognized the awe. They just held him and you know,
yeah.
just
mm-hmm.
were fascinated. There was just something about him that made them just think of him and talk about him and want to be like him. And I said, my goodness, can this be the vehicle that we can use to bring
yeah.
our children out of the destructive behavior patterns that they have become used to? And as that thought came to me, I went to Muhammad, and I said, Muhammad, I said, I found a little boy. In fact, that child's name was Jermaine. And that kid had been robbed and raped at 10 years old. He was
oh,
afraid
boy.
Of the dark. His mother couldn't leave him alone. And she came to me, and she wanted me to see what I could do to help him. And I said, well, let me see if I can take him to Muhammad Ali. And I made friends with Jermaine, and we finally ended up going to Muhammad's camp. And, of course, I had alerted Muhammad as to what this child's problem was prior to him
mm-hmm.
seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, when we arrived at the camp, Muhammad had me bring the boy to his cabin. Of course,
yeah.
women weren't allowed in the cabin. So I stood outside, and my goodness, an hour went into two, and then five. I said, my goodness, it was hot. I couldn't imagine what they were doing in there. Well, when the door finally opened, Kay, out comes Muhammad Ali as well as Jermaine. Both had cried, so their T-shirts were
oh.
soaking wet.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And Muhammad said to Jermaine, I'm coming into Newark. He said, I'm going to let everyone know that you're my new little brother, and no one
oh,
has
wow.
ever harm another hair on your head as long
uh-huh.
as you live.
Uh-huh.
Well, he looked at me, and he says, I want you to make the arrangements for me to come into Newark. And he said, and give that message to everyone. I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Jermaine and I, we had on Route 80, Route 22. Back into Newark we came. And sure enough, Muhammad came into Newark at that point.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was that day that we renamed Waverly Avenue to Muhammad Ali Avenue.
Was that the time also that he came to Bernice Bass's radio show?
No.
When she was broadcasting from the beauty salon?
On Springfield Avenue? No, that was...
I think so.
It was right
after
in that,
that
time frame. Yes,
mm-hmm.
A little after that.
Yeah.
And so Muhammad Ali then became someone that I learned to utilize as that avenue. It was good. It was good. He mm-hmm. loved children.
Well, you are known to do a lot with the kids. And I understand that you're going to be even doing more, and you want to, open up a couple of other places and to deal with the kids. And I think it's an absolutely wonderful, fabulous idea, because of your background and everything, and you're also the founder, and you serve as international president of Women Around the Ring, with chapters located in Africa, California, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Ohio, Detroit, and Pennsylvania, including Connecticut and New Jersey. So, you have always been a community activism and an inspiration for everybody. I'm joined with my daughter, Gina Payne Scott, and I'm quite sure she wants to ask you a few things. You and I go back many years when she was just a baby.
Uh-huh.
Gina,
sure.
Meet Jeff
Oh,
Brown.
I love it.
Good evening. Good evening, everybody.
How are you, my dear?
I'm good. Thank you. Yes, reading your bio also and listening to my mother's introduction of you and speaking of you earlier this week. First of all, could you tell us exactly where are the facilities that the youth can go to right now, your boxing rings, or where do you actually hold them, and what are the hours, where do they go, what do they need to do to sign up?
All right, well, presently, for the last 27 years, I should say, we're at 936 Bergen Street in Newark on the corner of Custer Avenue, and our hours are 3 to 8. What a child needs to do to join... Initially, he must bring his parents, one or two, whatever the case may be. And we have a membership application, and it's very important that I understand the school that child goes to, who his teacher is, who the principal of that school is, as well, because for that reason, we then can get into his homework or his or her homework.
Yes.
We have girls
right.
as well as boys, as a matter of fact. And and then we take it from there. Or if they have, some illness like asthma or something like that,
yeah,
I
right.
have to know as much as I can about that child.
As much as
so
about
I know
the child,
so
can help them. Sure.
Exactly.
And what's the age group of the students?
We start at 7 years old.
Uh-huh. And you
seven,
also have
17.
Martial arts there, Carolyn, right?
Yes, we do. We have martial arts. And one of the joys we had was in bringing the old martial artists back to Newark. Those, the guys that had their storefronts and whatnot open, I would dare say, 25, 30 years ago, who never received any recognition, no thank you or anything. And a lot of them left Newark for that reason.
Yeah.
But then
I
was able to find a lot of them, like James Fain and guys like that. They came in and we toured the schools. We had a 2-day martial arts exhibition extravaganza, and it was just really great. Because that
Go ahead, Carolyn.
I'm sorry.
When was the last time that you did an event in Newark, a boxing event in Newark?
Last year at
Robert
Tree
Where
Hotel.
Robert Tree Hotel.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. How
and
was
when
it
we get them, we have standing room only, and then not even standing room. Because you see, what it does, it brings that mother and her son together again. It gives them some place to go, some place to be together. It gives the mother another reason to be proud of her son and to encourage her son or daughter, as the case may be. And it's
I heard you talk about earlier that the kids come in, they're angry, they're frustrated, they're hurt, they just feel defeated. And so how do you feel that this particular sport, boxing, helps them to overcome some of those obstacles?
Well, because it teaches them self-confidence, strict dietary laws, teamwork, self-discipline, as well as loyalty. You see, all of that is embodied into that. See, boxing is just really the smokescreen. It's the components that make up the boxing that truly makes that person become whole.
Okay. So, when you're involved with the schools, does the school system welcome you when you get involved? Like you said, you need to know who the teachers are and what schools they go to. Are they encouraging of the extra support that you give them outside of the school?
Not really. Not the way they should. If
yeah.
there's a problem, you know, and I go to the school, I go and I introduce myself. But they don't, you know, it's not a village the way it used to be. It's not a village
mm-hmm.
the way it should be.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a village
yeah.
that it must become again. You
mm-hmm.
see, when you,
you
see our children. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know what's so great about this, Carolyn, is the fact that what you're doing now in turn in using the training of boxers with a physical fitness program, it seems to me that that would really fit right under the banner of the physical fitness programming within the school system because of, you know, children also, there's the bullying issue and there's also
yes.
the obesity issue, the physical, you know, training that they are not
absolutely.
Getting because, you know, gym classes don't exist anymore.
You're absolutely
right.
So,
and
right.
also, Gina, you know what this reminds me of, too? The Taibo. Remember the man who was doing Taibo?
Right,
he
Taibo,
was
yeah,
Taibo,
yeah,
and he was
class.
Using the boxing, you know, training movements, you know, for physical
yes,
education.
Right. You know,
yes.
another thing that I wanted to touch on, because I just came back from it today, it's very timely, is that right there on Bergen Street, you're in the South Ward. I actually literally just came back from Washington, D.C., and we had a tribute. The Vice President Biden, Speaker of the House, James Boehner, and Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, along with the congressional caucus members and foundation members, hosted a reception and a tribute to Congressman Payne. And what the Vice President said that he found very interesting about Congressman Payne was that he wanted to, when he first went into Congress, he wanted to show the kids on the street that there was a better life, that they can become better people. And I think it's programs like what you are offering that is helping them to become better people. When they see that there is something else, there's someplace else that they can direct their energy, there's someplace
perfect.
Else that they can, you know, there's another person in the community who cares about them through martial, you know, whether it's through martial arts, physical fitness, just the fact there's another adult there. But I find it fitting. Washington from this event, you know, for tribute for Congressman Payne, and so it's fitting that you're, you know, that's exactly what you're doing in the South Ward, which is his ward.
Well, you know, Gina, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, he lived approximately 4 or 5 blocks from the gym, and there came a time, I know it was approximately 2 years, 8 months, and 9 hours. That I happened to run across a flyer that had fallen on the street from someone's car,
mm-hmm.
I guess. In any event, I picked that flyer up, and as I read it, I realized diagonally across the street from our gym, someone was going to have a liquor store, a tavern, and a dance hall. I said, oh, my God, not we can't have that. So I went to work organizing the neighborhood, the churches, the religious institutions, et cetera. And I contacted Donald Payne, Jr. And I said to him, I need your help. He said, in doing what? I said, in saving the lives of children born and unborn. If they put this liquor store, tavern, and dance hall on this corner, there'll be prostitution, alcohol, selling of drugs, there'll be death. It'll be a death
mm-hmm.
trap. Because, you see,
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact, the way the position that building is in, the children would have to pass, I mean, thousands of children literally would have to pass
sure.
that place to get to school and to come from school home. I said, they're going to get killed. In addition to that, there was a church adjacent to where they wanted to put that building. And that church happened to consist of only women and children. And they could tell you a story, and they told the congressman and the councilman the story of how 20 or 30 years ago, when a tavern did exist there, as they came to go to Sunday school, to have Sunday school, they would literally have to go and clean up the debris, the used condoms, all kinds of broken glass and whatnot before the
awful.
Kids could even come. So to think 20, 25 years later, they're older women. They still have no men, you know, there in their church. To think that they would have to go through that again was absolutely terrifying. So as we organized, councilmen as well as the congressmen, they assisted me in every way possible, Kay and Gina, in helping to defeat the possibility of our children being exposed to that type of thing. And as a matter of fact, on March the 27th, the final decision was made from the state ABC board that there can never, ever be a liquor store, a tavern, nor a dance hall.
Oh, my goodness.
At
that's this March?
Yes.
This year? Wow,
yes.
Congratulations, Carolyn.
Yes, yeah, at 945 Burger Street. So because of the congressman and his son, so many children who they will never, ever know have them to thank for it.
Wow, and you mean to tell me that, Gina, that was a week after Donald had passed?
Donald passed.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
COVID-19 passed on March 6th.
Wow.
And so that passed on, you say, on the 27th. Wow.
March 27th.
Yeah.
That's a great tribute to community work, to what you're doing, to people, you know, like the congressman and the councilman. So we need more people like you, really, to get involved in the community and not be frustrated, because we know, since we're talking about the congressman on this particular day, as well as what you're doing, you know, his life was dedicated to, you know, selfless acts of just hoping to make his community better here and abroad. And I applaud you. I applaud you absolutely for, you know, for picking up the mantle and running with it.
Yeah, that's great. That's Carolyn. What a story. Wow.
Yeah.
And now what you want to do is you're going to be, you know, enlarging or increasing your gyms and, you know, putting in these programs for the children. I think that's absolutely wonderful. And I'm so glad that, in fact, the political campaign is going on now. And you know that the congressman's son, Donald Payne Jr., is running. And, you know, I'm supporting him. My family is supporting him. So
I support him wholeheartedly. And I'm going to organize the same area where we call ourselves liquor store objectors. I'm going to keep them together. And you got to understand something. This fight was really a struggle because we were going up against some big boys. We really went up against
City
Hall.
People have a big lobby.
That's right.
Yeah.
We went up against City Hall, and we won. So people have to understand the power in their voting strength. They must recognize the fact that one vote can tip the balance of power. So we must come out and we must support Donald Payne Jr., not just because his father preceded him, but because he's earned the right himself.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, as I think about the, you know, people, you know, women our ages, Trey, and we tell our young people, listen, educate, go to school, educate yourself, and then come back to the community. Well, my goodness, here's a young man who never left the community.
And
that's
He's still in
the community.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
He's given
with
all he can possibly give. So I think it's incumbent upon us to stand with him in spite of terrifying odds. You see, that then will help our children to recognize and understand what it is to be loyal, what it is to be faithful, what it is to truly stand up and be counted.
You know, Carolyn, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to ask the people, you know, the production people at Black Wax, BW Moving Images, where we are broadcasting from ordinarily. Right now we're broadcasting from another location. However, they are in Jersey City and we're in another location. I'm going to ask them if there are any calls coming in. And if there's any calls, you know, Shauna and Ayana and Ty, can you put them through right now? You know, and give us a signal, and, you know, whoever is calling her on the line, you know, we can, you know, have them ask a question or talk to us also.
Sure, be glad.
Is there a caller on the line?
Yes.
Yes, hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes,
go right ahead.
Yes, I would like to ask Ms. Carolyn Kelly, what prompted her as a female to get into boxing?
Well, because I realized the fact that I'm the mother of civilization.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, anything that our young men get into, anything that excites them, anything that can make them become the president of the United States, we must get into that arena as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is the caller finished, or would you like to say something else?
Yes,
okay.
I would like to ask Ms. Shabazz, what would she like to see in the boxing industry today?
What I would like to see?
Yes.
I would like to see our young men truly embrace it. I would like to see them become champions of the world. I would like to see them understand and recognize what real competition is all about, and to also know what it is to win or to lose.
Yeah, sportsmanship.
Yes.
That's right.
Because you can
That's
lose
right.
and still win.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Hello?
Listen, are there any other? Yes, you're
yes,
on there.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
I would like
Hello.
To ask Mr. Bass, which way would her husband have with her in helping her towards boxing?
What role does her husband play in helping her towards boxing?
Yes.
Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because she's such a powerful woman.
Yeah.
Well, because very simple. my husband is my strength.
Yeah.
You see, he's the leader in our home. He's the leader in our world. He's a Muslim man who recognizes and only fears the God we serve. He keeps me in tow, as a matter of fact. And with him being such a sports, let me tell you something very interesting about my husband. He was approached to become a professional baseball player. He loves sports. And
wow.
they told him, said, but you cannot play football while we're waiting to, you know, bring him into that arena. He went out and he played football anyway because he loved football equally as well. Well, he ended up hurting his knee, and that was the end of that career. But it was the end of the physical part of the career, not the mental part. So he I've watched him transfer what he could have done or would have done into a reality for our young men and women, for them to understand you must stay focused, and I'm going to teach you to become focused. So he's like the Pied Piper in the gym, as a matter of fact. Kids follow him, Mr. Mustafa, can we talk to you about something? And he takes time for them. He's that father figure. He's that mentor for them, and that's something that I can't be. So we complement each other.
All right. Carolyn, Hello. Thank you. Are there any other callers?
Yes. Yeah.
Right
hi, this is Moon Yin. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, I don't think something's wrong with this connection. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Okay. This is Moon Yin Jackson. How are you?
Hi, Moon Yin. How are you? You
yeah,
know, I had
wonderful.
Contacted you. You're on the air right now.
Okay, wonderful. But I wanted to say something to Carolyn. She was the first Bell's bondsman that I used with my clients. she showed me around her gym. And one thing I want to thank you for, you encouraged me to pursue representing entertainers. You were very concerned that the boxers and other entertainers did not have pensions and did
right.
not have
exactly.
a fail-safe financial planning. You don't remember
right.
that.
I do
sure.
remember. No, I do remember.
Do you?
Because
I've always... I admire you greatly, and
Thank you.
I do appreciate your contribution, and I couldn't wait to get on just to say that. I think we don't show our appreciation enough for each other.
Thank you so much.
Thank
yeah. you so very much.
And Moon Yin, I had contacted you about coming on the show, and I will call you right after the show is over so we can plan, because I know you're involved in a number of exciting things. And where are you right now? Are you in Washington or Virginia or where? Well, I don't know. She may be out of the country. But, Carolyn, listen, thank you so much.
Yes. You're more than welcome, and I thank you.
Okay. Really fascinating information, and thank you so much. One last thing you want to ask, Regina, and then we want to tie it up.
Really, I appreciate the conversation also, and I would like to also encourage you to get involved with the congressman and with the congressman-elect Don Payne Jr. May 8th is his election, but also to try to get the schools on board with what you're doing, so you can work in concert with the schools.
Okay.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay.
Thank you so
very much. A lot. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye. God bless you. Now, Gina, you know, you and I can talk for a minute now. You were down at in Washington. Tell us about it. As a matter of fact, you know, the people just called Moonyin Jackson, you know, also